Dharmo tapapa nichaya sutayasta pamsi brahma dikita patagava dayascha jiva yadatta matra vibhava prakata prabhava govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, by whose conferred power are maintained the manifested potencies. They are found to exist in all virtues, all vices, the Vedas, the penances, and all jivas, from Brahma to the meanest insect. So that covers everything. Everything good, everything bad. The so-called bad. All vices even are manifesting from Govinda. Purport. By Dharma, this meant the allotted functions of Varna and Ashram, manifested by the 20 Dharma Shastras on the authority of the Vedas. So in the Vedas, there's a section called the Dharma Shastras that talk about what you should do and what you shouldn't do. Of these two divisions, Varna Dharma is that function. Okay, so there's two divisions of the Dharma Shastras. One is talking about what you do in the ashram, you know, the four ashrams of brahmachari, varnaprastha, grihastha, varnaprastha, and sannyas, and then the four varnas, what the sudras do, what the vaishyas do, what the kshatriyas do, and what the brahmins do. Of these two divisions, varna dharma is that function which is the outcome of the distinctive nature of the four varnas, Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, and Ashrams, Dharma, is that the function which is appropriate to the respective ashrams or stations of those who belong to the four stages, namely Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Varnaprastha, and Sannyas. All customary activities of mankind have been targeted in these twofold divisions. Sins mean nescience, the root of all sins and sinful desire. Also, the greatest iniquities and sins flow from them and the ordinary sins, all sorts of unprincipled conduct. So the source of sin is what? It says here, if we go back, it says, sins mean nescience, the root of all sins and sinful desire. So nescience, ignorance, is the root of all sins and sinful desire. Sorry about Raksha Prabhu. We're on page 97. About halfway through the purport here, kind of. So sin is comes from ignorance. The category of the Shrutis means the Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva, and the Upanishads, which form the crescent jewel of the Vedas. So what's the Shruti? The Vedas. And there's how many Vedas? Four. And what's the Upanishads? Are the Upanishads part of the Vedas? Which part? Let's use the mics since we have people, devotees cooking. Okay.
Well, that has always been a question for me. They are considered the jewels, as I know. And the Isha Upanishad that we read is an extraction from that. So it's one of the important parts of the Vedas. You may elaborate a little more on that.
In the Namasakam, also, Rupa Goswami is referring to the Upanishads as the jewel of the Vedas, and that they're pointing to the holy name as the conclusion. So there's four Vedas, and they're called Shruti, because they were originally spoken by Godhead coming down. And then everything after that is called the supplemental Vedas, and that's called Smriti. So the Mahabharata, the Puranas, even the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat Purana, they're not Shruti, they're Smriti. They're spoken by others about the Shruti. So that's... And then the Vedas itself, the Veda itself has four divisions, which is the Brahmanas, the Samhitas, the Aranyakas, and the Upanishad. So the Brahmanas are the, I think, the rituals. And the Samhitas are the verses and the songs. And the Aranyakas are the esoteric rituals. And then the Upanishads are the philosophical explanation of the verses. And so the Upanishads are the really the philosophical essence of the Vedic teachings. And so that is all called Shruti. So we were beginning here mentioning how there's Dharma Shastras, and they're in two divisions, covering the ashrams and the varnas. And it's mentioning up to this point that sinful activities, the basis of sin is what? Nescience. Ignorance. So sin comes from ignorance. And of course, it's leading up, you know, what's going to dispel this ignorance? The Shrutis. Yeah. Yeah. Knowledge. The Vedas.
Probably regarding this ignorance. Many times we know that that is actually a wrong thing to do. So we actually have some knowledge that that is not really a good thing to do. But we still do it. Is that still considered as ignorance, even though he has a knowledge that he is not right?
Yes, because it's a certain level of unawareness. Sometimes awareness and knowledge are used in the same context. And Prabhupada sometimes, even intelligence, sometimes Prabhupada uses the word knowledge, intelligence, but really what we're speaking about is awareness. So when we perform sin, the result is always painful. Will always cause suffering. To the degree that we know that, we won't do it. And to the degree that we don't realize it, we're unaware of it, we'll do that. And basically, Arjuna asked Krishna the same question. What is it that impels us? Right? And it's lust. And Krishna explains how lust covers the knowledge of the soul, bewilders us into thinking, oh, yes. There's some pleasure there. Let me try it again, chewing the chewed, right? Over and over. So, yes, it's a kind of unawareness. We think because we're awake that we're aware. But actually, even though we're awake, we're asleep to what we are. You know, because we're identifying with our body and with our thoughts. And we're thinking, that's me. That's ignorance. It's a certain level of unawareness. But by chanting Hare Krishna, by meditating, and by coming to the sattva gun, sattva, which brings enlightenment, then we start to see what we're not. We start to see we're not our mind, we start to see we're not our body. When we hear the Shruti, we also start to see that we're not independent, that we're part of the Supreme Lord. And if we have the fortune of hearing from a guru in disciplic succession, then we start to see that we're part of the Supreme Lord, even though we're one, we're different. So to just think that we're one, that's a certain ignorance too. I mean, there's different, you know, the grossest ignorance is to identify with this body. And if you're an animal, then you have no sense of existence even. You have no sense that you exist. But the human being has that sense, that perception. So that's a little less ignorant. And then if you're a follower of the Vedas or of some religious process, you're even less ignorant. And if you happen to be fortunate enough to be reading Brahma Samhita on a Saturday morning, then you'll become less and less ignorant, because you'll start to realize that God's a person and that we have a relationship with Him. So this science of devotion is based on this knowledge, this awareness. There's different levels of awareness. So the more unaware we are, the more we'll shoot ourselves in the foot, as they say. And we'll just cause ourselves pain by ignorant activities. So we're down here. The category of the Shrutis means the Rig, Sama, Yajur, Atharva, and the Upanishads, which form the crest jewel of the Vedas. There's Bhakti Jorish, Hare Krishna. There's your camera over there. So, then it comes to tapas. The tapas means all regular practices that are learnt with the view of attainment of the proper function of the self. Wow. That's a heavy sentence, huh? Tapas means all regular practices that are learnt with the view of attainment of the proper function of the self. So that's Srila Bhakti's Sananta's definition of tapas. Can anyone translate that for me? How would you put that in more simpler terms? There's a microphone. Yeah. There we go.
Proper function of the self is to realign yourself to the constitutional position of the self.
Yes.
So whatever you do, whatever practice you do, to realign, we are right from this line. So whatever you do to realign, it's called proper or sadhana.
Very good. So it's all those activities that help us purify ourselves of this ignorance. And it's it could be difficult, or it could be not so difficult. What are some of the tapashas that we're doing that you find difficult? Is there anything in this practice that we're doing, is there anything that you're finding difficult?
Well, one thing, keeping up with the rounds on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Part of regulated activity.
So chanting rounds, you have a vow, following that vow.
Yeah, you say, you decide that I'll do so many rounds per day, and then you find that sometimes it's a struggle doing them.
Yeah. What causes a struggle?
It's competition with time.
So other priorities, huh? Okay, so what are some other tapases that we're doing?
Coming to Brahma Samhita class at 7:30.
Yeah, you work all week long, you get up early, you have no other free time, and Saturday morning you have to get up and...
We get up Saturday a bit early.
Huh?
We get up a bit early on Saturday morning.
Yeah, yeah. You have to get up earlier just to come here. Could be doing something else. You have other, if you have family and children, and you have other, you can't even have time to do your laundry during the week, especially if you come here on Wednesday nights. And so, yeah. But, actually what you mentioned so far to me were like, not so hard, but when for me, when I heard the four regulated principles, was a real shock. I mean, it was so painful just to even hear about it. No illicit sex, no intoxication, gambling wasn't so much of an issue. meat eating. Actually, I'd already become a vegetarian, but I wasn't very, I didn't know how to do it very well, you know, so I wasn't that strict. But no illicit sex, no intoxication. To me, that was like an arrow in the heart. But these things, you know, they cause us to completely, you know, fall into forgetfulness of the self. So to start out, it could be a little painful. Is there anything else somebody finds difficult that we haven't mentioned?
Controlling the mind.
Huh? Controlling the mind. Yeah.
Mind and senses.
Yeah.
Pure chanting.
Huh?
Pure chanting, like pure. Attentive chanting is something. Which
yeah, to bring your attention back to the mantra. Yeah, it's. It can be tedious, huh?
Unable to express your thought, Krishna.
That's a tapasya, huh? Unable to. I don't know about that level.
I sometimes find it difficult to associate, or sometimes I find it very difficult to socialize at work with my devotees. Sometimes they want to do stuff outside of work. You find yourself in circumstances, certain places that you would never really want to go to, but you have to for work. And sometimes I used to think, instead of letting me bring this down, me come down with this, instead of me bringing it down, I should use this opportunity to try to bring people up. So I try to think in that way.
Give them your association.
Yeah, just try to think, well, here I am in this place I would never be caught dead in, but now I'm here. And instead of letting it drag me down, let me just try to think about Krishna and try to bring something positive to the situation. Mm-hmm. But still, I find it difficult.
Yeah, resist, persist. So, yeah, so we're doing these different tapasyas. Right, so why are we doing them? What's the motive?
Well,
let's use the microphone. Thanks.
As has been pointed out in the purport, it is for the attainment of the proper function of the self, which is a little more academic. But we are doing that because we have this awareness, as you said earlier, from the knowledge we have gained through hearing and chanting, that we are not really the body. So we don't have to necessarily pursue a path of sense gratification, but that the preferred path is the path of tapasya, in which these activities are involved. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Have you heard the terms shreyas and preyas?
I've heard the shreyas. Don't know much about the implication or the meaning of it.
Well, shreyas is you get something, but not right away. You get something of benefit, but you don't get it right away. You have to pay for it. You have to work for it. But because it's a high price, it's of high value. And the prayas is of low value, but you get it right away. So instant gratification of the senses would be prayas. The shreyas would be to delay your gratification. Right? Just like going to school for how many years is great tapas, right? You don't get the result right away. You know? How long did it take you to get your PhD?
Well, 4 years after doing undergraduate school, so until the age of 26, you are tied up.
And of course, in a sense, even that is nothing towards our ultimate benefit. Right? So the real shreyas, the real auspicious result is spiritual awakening love for God is the real shreyas. But in order to get that, we have to put off the prayas. You know, we have to make some sacrifice, and you can't necessarily have both. You know, just like children. You know, and in order to convince a child to delay gratification, you know, you have to give reasons. You know, you have to reinforce those reasons, right? And so that's part of hearing and chanting, part of coming here and coming together as a group and hearing the Shrutis, hearing the Shmitis, hearing from the great Acharyas, is they're reminding us of what we're really after and giving us all the reasons why we should go after that and not be deviated for some temporary, illusory kind of gratification, which we've already been doing anyway for many lifetimes. It's called Charvishacharvanana. Punapunas charvita charvananam, again and again, chewing the chew. So, you know, we've had many wives and many husbands and many children and lived in many all types of countries, and we've been doctors and we've been dogs and we've been all. And what is the goddess? So, but sometimes we need to be reminded of that so we keep our priorities straight. So, it's mentioned here, we're near the end of the paragraph here on page 97, finishing up this purport. Tapas means all regular practices that are learnt with the view of the attainment of proper function of the self. In many cases, in the form known as the pancha tapas, these practices are difficult character. These practices are of a difficult character. Yoga, with its 8 constituent limbs and devotedness to the knowledge of the undifferentiated Brahman, as included herein. So what Bhaktisananda is mentioning, that tapas sometimes refers to 5 kinds of tapasya, and it's in relationship to the Ashtanga Yoga, the 8 limbs of yoga, which is popularized by Patanjali in his Yoga Sutras. But the ultimate goal is towards the realization of the Brahman. So he's mentioning that sometimes people think of tapasya as characterized by Patanjali and the Yoga Sutras with the goal of kevalya, or entering into the Brahman. All these are so many distinctive features within the revolving round of the fruitive activities of the conditioned souls. I think we'll just keep going on, otherwise it'll... The conditioned souls are embarked on a sojourn of successive births from 84 lakhs of varieties of generating organs. So basically we've had 8,400,000 different types of sexual organs, meaning we've had all different types of bodies. And all of those bodies have sexual organs, and there's usually a female or a male. This is also one of the verses in the Brahma Samhita, that everything that's being generated from Shambhu, all the forms that are coming, either have a male or a female generative organ. They are differentiated into different orders of beings, as the Devas, the Danavas, the Rakshas, the Manavas, the Nagas, the Kinaras, and the Gandharvas. These Jivas, from Brahma down to the smallest insect, are infinite in type. They make up the aggregate of the conditioned souls from the degree of Brahma to that of the tiny fly, little fly, and are the dis- and are the distinctive features within the revolving wheel of karma. Every one of them is endowed with distinctive powers as individuals and is powerful in a particular sphere. It's true, right? You know, dogs can smell all types and hear all types of, but we can't do that. But a dog isn't aware of itself like a human being is. By these powers are by their nature not fully developed in them. The degree of power and the nature of property vary according to the measure of manifestation of the possession of the individual conferred upon him by Sri Govinda. So everything is coming from Govinda. As it goes, as it's stated in the verse, let's just read the verse again, because that was a lot. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, by whose conferred power are maintained the manifested potencies that are found to exist in all virtues, all vices, the Vedas, the penances, and all jivas from Brahma down to the meanest insect. Wow, what a purport. Any last comments before we go on?
Can you say a little bit more about Shmiti? Because this word, this purport referred to Shruti, I believe.
Yes.
And you started mentioning something about Shmiti.
Yeah. So Shruti means that, I think literally in Sanskrit, that which is heard. Here's our Sanskrit scholar. And Shmiti is that which is remembered. Like Smaranam. And so the Shruti is the original sound vibration coming from Godhead himself. And it originally comes as one Veda. And then Vyasadeva, he divides it into four and makes it more intelligible for common people. And he divides it into the four Vedas. And so the Vedas have those four aspects that we talked about before. So everything that's coming after that, a lot of it is also written by Vyasadeva, is called Shmriti. And so the Puranas, or the Shmritis, the Manu Samhita, is a Shmriti. The Srimad Bhagavatam, which is part of the Puranas, is all Shmriti. And what the great Acharyas have written about that, you know, all the books of the great Acharyas we accept as also is Shmriti.
So Vedanta Sutra also probably is Shmriti.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure about Vedanta Sutra.
I think even though it's not part of the, he doesn't include it in here, but it's usually Brahma Sutra is generally accepted
as Shruti.
We can ask Randkishore.
Yeah.
But so Brahma Sutra, Vedanta Sutra is treated as Shruti for some reason, even though it's not part of the four Vedas in the Upanishads. Whereas
it comes after. Yeah, Mahabharata, also the Ramayana would be Shmriti. So everything excluding the Vedas and maybe the Vedanta Sutra would be, that comes after that is Mahabharata would be Shmriti. Vedanta Sutra is a commentary written by Vyasadeva about the Vedas. And it's a very condensed form of codes that give the essential truths of the Vedas. And then it's mentioned in the... There's one Purana that mentions, I think, that Srimad Bhagavatam is Vyasadeva's commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So that for those who want to really understand Vedanta Sutra, they should read Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore, the Gaudiyas, Vaishnavas, in the line of Lord Chaitanya, didn't write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Like all the other sampradayas, including Shankara, wrote a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. But in Lord Chaitanya's opinion, it wasn't necessary, because Vyasadeva's commentary, whose commentary could be better than the author's? And so Vyasadeva had already written a commentary. which is Srimad Bhagavatam. So there was no necessity. You couldn't outdo that. You couldn't make it better than what Vyasadev had made it in form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we had a question of why, since the Vedanta Sutra comes after the Shrutis, why is it considered Shruti?
But is it considered? Is Vedanta Sutra considered in the category of Shruti or Smriti?
I've always heard it referred to as Shruti, but anyway, these are the.
It's like the Upanishads, same category. In a similar category with the Upanishads, it's a condensation of all the Upanishads. Somehow
it's considered like part of the Upanishads.
I mean, you know, I think. Our Gaudiya Vaishnava perspective, it's kind of arbitrary. You know, it's more of like a smarter consideration. You study Sri Goswami's Satsandarbhas, he goes to great lengths in the first one, especially the Tapasandarbha, to prove by Vedic evidence and different evidence that the Puranas are equally as important as the Vedas, and then he, after proving that they're equally as important, he goes and beyond that and proves that they're actually much more important.
In Kali Yuga.
Especially in Kali Yuga.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, even it not being in Kali Yuga, they're more important in terms of information they contain. So it's kind of a, you know, an arbitrary thing. Who established, you know, that. Where does it say that the Smritis are better than the Smritis? If they're any different? Or, you know. So Krishna himself spoke Bhagavad Gita and said that the Vedas are like the breathing of Vishnu. So Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. Why is it? You know, so that's very arbitrary. And it's, you know, certain people may have a certain, you know, slant on the Vedas. They want to get from our perspective, we don't really see that distinction. So I think that's the most important thing. I don't really know. You know, yeah, that's all the exact reasons, according to smart, that are kind of philosophy, but it's not our specialty.
The Nigama Kalpak Toror Galitam Palam Sukamukada Amrita Dharma Samhitam, that which is actually being repeated by Shukadeva Goswami, and you know, it's like more fully digested, and it's the ripened fruit. It's become even sweeter. It's made better for this. Some of these particular Vaishnava Smriti literature, and of course, the point being made that which is spoken by Krishna himself. Why is that considered? Why would that be considered any less authoritative than you know, than the in the Shruti? So, I just want to second that. The important point is that this Vaishnava Smriti literature, particularly Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, they're better than trying to, you know, wade through the Upanishads and see the real meaning there. That they've already been elaborated and, you know, peeled for us and put in a plate with honey on top and, you know, just made completely perfect for our understanding, rather than, you know, some of the more difficult. Lord Chaitanya said something about how the I don't remember the exact quote, but basically that the Upanishads or the Vedas are difficult, or you know, they're less direct. I forget the word dure or something like that. Distant.
Okay, let's chant Hare Krishna. Yeah, Lord Chaitanya said so much about that and then demonstrated it in his personal life and in his preaching, right? Especially when he confronted or he was confronted by the impersonalists headed by Prakasananda Saraswati and Varanasi, and he was questioned, you know, why don't you study Vedanta? And, you know, there's that whole conversation. And he does discuss Vedanta later on, but at first he says, because my spiritual master told me that I was a fool. And then he related the history of his spiritual master and how through chanting Hare Krishna he became like a madman, and that was the goal, that was the essence of Vedanta, was to realize, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and experience the rasa. And then he explained that to them as well. And that was basically... And then in his own personal life, he didn't even write. He only wrote 8 slokas. So his whole... essence of his teaching was to glorify the name of God, and through that everything will come. But like we were saying before in the beginning, we need this knowledge, we need these reasons, you know. We need to be convinced why we should be doing this tapasya, you know, because the taste may not be there right away. So
now it would appear that Vyasadeva was given the same advice by Narad Muni, that you need to glorify. And he did it by writing all these literatures and so many books. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just did it by his life experience. Didn't even write much literature, but has had so much impact.
Yeah, and actually what you bring out another point was that Narada Muni told, you know, Vyasadeva had already written the Vedas. He had already written Vedanta Sutra. And he had already written all that, and he wasn't satisfied. Then he asked Narada Muni, and he said, because you haven't directly glorified the Personality of Godhead. And then he wrote the Bhagavad Purana, which Lord Chaitanya accepted as the spotless Purana and as the essence of Vedanta. And in Sanskrit, especially in the first verse, you can, it's the beginning of the Bhagavatam and the end of the Bhagavatam, you can, it's shown in the Sanskrit how it's directly pointed towards the Vedanta Sutra, because the very first verses of the Bhagavatam are very similar to the first verses of the Vedanta Sutra, and in the end in that way as well.